Welcome to CBC Next. I'm joined here with John Messenger, and he's been going to church here about 2-3 years, and we've known each other that long. He's been a great friend to me, and today we're going to follow up the service that we just had just not that long ago and talking about anxiety.
I love anxiety.
Yeah, it's the best. Yeah, it really, really helps sometimes, and also times it's debilitating. What stood out to you in, or just what have you learned in this topic of anxiety? Whether it's something from this morning or you know, in your own story.
I think in general, one thing that I really like about talking about anxiety, especially, you know, in our congregation or at church or another ministry, is that it makes it a little less unique.
Right.
Which I think makes it a little bit easier for someone to not have tunnel vision that they're so broken or that their you know, world's going to end or this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Because anxiety will eventually manifest into something that can snowball.
Right.
And then it can be debilitating, like we said. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about it in places like this, we get it out in the open in a way that makes me realize, hey, I'm not the only one struggling.
Right.
I see other strong men and women in the congregation going about their business, whether they be, you know, a CEO of a company or whether they work at McDonald's, and they get by.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Anxiety in the moment feels absolutely like it's the end of the world.
Right. So. Yeah, this is one of those things, and there are several subjects like this, but one of those things where you expose it to the light and it kind of loses a little bit of its power.
That's right.
And yeah, so that's why it's important for us to talk about these type of things. And we've shared before, Tori and I both have struggles with anxiety. And so that's why we think it's important. It's embarrassing, you know, oh, this pastor, he should not have any worries or problems. Why doesn't he just trust God more?
Right.
Well, yeah, I would love that to work. I'll just tell my brain to quit, you know. But it's important, like you said, to just be honest with people about your struggles. And sometimes that, even that in itself can kind of lessen my burden and also lessen the person that maybe too afraid to talk about it yet, but at least it gives a little bit of a, we're all in this together.
Something you touched on that is like a different perspective regarding the anxiety that I never really thought of is the fact that if you're like not telling people about your problems and you're not being vulnerable and just having like everyday conversation, whether it's about the weather or whatever, and telling everybody you're fine, you're not really doing your part in trying to experience the healing that comes with that community. And being able to say something out loud makes it lose power.
Yeah.
Like you said, and that's a big thing in Celebrate Recovery that's foundational to the ministry, right? Whether we've had drug addiction problems, gambling problems, sexual issues, we try to get up and we encourage people, you know, not right when they walk through the door, but after they're comfortable, to just spew all that out.
Right.
And at first I was terrified.
Sure.
I was like, man, I'm not going to be viewed as somebody who's a good person. I'm not going to be accepted. Because, you know, we have a past. My past, I used to think, was something that people would shun me for, or that I wouldn't ever be able to be in the church crowd or the people.
Right.
And sure enough, you get up there and you just spew all this stuff out, and then you're met with, like, open arms. Like, people just want to talk to you more.
Yeah.
So I've learned, I guess, the start of that lesson, like letting your anxiety out, making it known, confiding in people in Celebrate Recovery. And I think that now what I really want to do is start doing it in other fields of work in my life, because being vulnerable isn't like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make you not cool. And even at work sometimes, if you're stressed, like being vulnerable and letting that out, that's something I struggle with. Like, I don't want to look like I'm not the strong person that, you know, captains the ship, so to speak. But I think that there's a lot of value in being open and honest.
So something that I think is important that sometimes I'm a fixer. Right? Like, and Tori will come and tell me, this is how I'm feeling. And really what she wants more than anything else is just a little bit of like support. Like even, and we'll do this back and forth with each other. Sometimes I'll say, I know this is wrong. Like, I know this doesn't make sense that this person over, you know, across town is plotting to ruin my life.
Yeah.
You know this doesn't make sense, but this is how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Help me talk this through a little bit. And sometimes that's what we need, is just to be able to share a little bit about what's going on. And sometimes, and often with me, once I'm able to verbalize that stuff, it's like, maybe this is just anxiety and not a real issue.
So to touch back, just so I understand too, you early on in the sermon made sure to distinguish the difference between fear and anxiety.
Absolutely, yeah.
And this is where it kind of hits me inside, because I realize a lot of my anxiety is also like borderline paranoia. Mm-hmm. So fear, when we're, you know, afraid of something, it's usually to an actual evident threat,
right?
You said, and then yeah. Anxiety is like the perceived threat of something unknown
right.
That could happen.
Absolutely.
And I think that when I start feeling that kind of anxiety about what could happen, that's yeah. When the paranoia really like gives it, it's a liaison between paranoia yeah. and anxiety.
Right. Absolutely.
So that really was helpful to me too.
Yeah. And then that, you know, so it could probably be anxiety, paranoia to a level of like panic, of yeah. A panic attack of, and where sometimes people don't even know why they're having a panic attack. But these things like hum below the surface, and Tori and I'll talk, and I'll notice a tick that she might have, or some type of way that she tries to comfort herself, and I'll ask her like, are you feeling anxious? No. I'm like, are you sure you're not feeling anxious? Because your body is giving those signals off, and I was like, is it the money this month? No. Is it the kids? No. And we'll just narrow the thing. Oh, maybe it is that, you know, and just even being able to talk it through can help a lot. And that's why we need to know each other.
I have really strong tells when I'm anxious, because my anxiety, it's better treated now through medication, like you talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. But I've been known to let mine, turn into a panic attack before.
Right.
And a lot of that, it is mental. It goes from anxiety to paranoia to panic, like you said.
Right.
And mine, it just gets to the point where like I immediately wonder if I'm dying, right? Like I'll check my pulse,
absolutely.
I'll sit there, I'll stand up, put my arms over my head, and think I can breathe. So it really, it's a really difficult mm-hmm. situation to deal with. But then other people in my life, like I know my wife gets anxious all the time about mm-hmm. a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. She hides it really well.
Yeah. Right.
And I just wish that I, you know what I mean? Like she would be more forthcoming, because even in the home, that would make me feel like I was a little bit more on a level playing field.
Right.
Like, so.
Yeah. And some of that's just building, you know, habits and build in the bridges with people. We talked about that today, about like really needing to know and be known and all those things like that. And that doesn't come right away. And it doesn't, because there's some people that, like you said, are just more naturally closed off. And sometimes it's hard to get through those.
Do you think, can you relate with this? Like some of the closest people that I know love me the most and that care for me the mm-hmm. most that I should be confiding in, like mm-hmm. we build up like these other external walls or like these barriers because we don't want that person to worry or we don't want them to know something that's like a weakness inside of us.
Absolutely.
And I do that a lot. Like I'll confide in people mm-hmm. and some of the people I confide in might not even give a care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but then I realized too today when you were talking, like I have so many people that love me and care about me that I know would really, really like lend a listening ear.
Right.
Or want to help me through it, that for whatever reason, whether it's because of my job, I don't want them to, I don't want to undermine myself in my job and be like, oh, this dude's completely anxious mess all the time.
Yeah.
Or in my personal life, like I don't want to tell somebody who might be deeply enmeshed, like, or meshed with like my Celebrate Recovery or other things.
Yeah.
So then we search for people who are more appropriate to be able to vent on. And really we should be telling those people that are closest to us the most.
So this last week I read through the book of John and it talks about Jesus washing the feet of the disciples, right? And I find myself really identifying with Peter saying, Jesus, don't wash my feet, right? And I think sometimes we're that way with the people that are real close with us. Like you said, like, I'll be there for you. I'll do anything for you.
Yeah.
But I don't want to burden you with my anxiety.
Right.
But sometimes that's what's needed, is for us to allow our feet to be washed, you know, and to humble ourselves a little bit.
Certainly.
But I mean, I know what you're talking about. As a pastor, like, you know, you have that.
It's difficult.
Yeah, right. You have that. So I have to make sure that I have people that I can just be myself with and just and not have to be Pastor Phil. I could just be Phil. Because it's a really hard thing and
the leading, dynamic
and leading in Celebrate Recovery and the job that where you're like dealing with people where and they look at you as a hope and an
source
inspiration
of
which is appropriate, but it is a pressure for you that doesn't jump out right away that, oh no, do I have to maintain this image or can I just be real, you know? And I ultimately I think it is helpful even for people. I find when I am the most real with people, it really actually helps, and it might hurt me, and I might feel like I dinged my reputation a little bit, but people like genuine people, and yeah. they feel close to genuine people. And so a lot of that's just noise in our ear to say, you got to keep this image up.
Well, and if you're, you know, looking at a person who on the outside, their life looks perfect and they never have a problem or whatnot, mm-hmm. there's several conclusions one could draw. You'd be like, oh, this person just doesn't care enough about me to tell me anything that's really going on in their life. Or secondly, you could just see that maybe there's a constant level of, you know, whether it be barriers up that looks like fakeness.
Right.
But one thing that I did notice in Celebrate Recovery, when I was an early leader, you know what I mean? I'd get up, we'd do worship, I'd, mm-hmm. you know, teach sometimes or talk, and like I wouldn't share openly and honestly. Right. You know, small group has become a place of refuge for me.
Right.
And because, well, let me backphrase. I started to realize when other leaders were leading small groups with me mm-hmm. that most of the time everything was hunky-dory for them. Mm-hmm. It was always more like I'm observing you guys share open and honestly, and I'm providing guidance.
Right.
But once I started sharing about my own struggles, like they'd see me up there perhaps worshiping or teaching a lesson. And then we go into small group and I'm like, hey, I'm a complete mess and I'm crazy. Then I'd have like guys approach me like, hey, will you sponsor me? Or hey, can we like talk once in a while about our issues? So I really, breaking down all those walls and trying to be open and vulnerable. There's a part of leadership too that I think really can be strengthened through someone knowing that you're an open book, right? Like you're no better than everybody else.
And absolutely.
I've been trying to figure out how to do that more in other areas. Like I said, it's hard though, like at work, because at work you're like trying to put on like a stone cold, like I got this face, and you don't want the people beneath you to start questioning your ability to do things.
It is. And there probably is a right balance and a wrong balance. You know, we've all met that person that we see at like the grocery store and you're like, hey man, how's it doing? Or how's it going? And they're just like unload their whole life. And you're like,
just been waiting.
I was not expecting this to, and so maybe there is a balance of the right people at the right time. But I think it's a something we do need to be intentional about, in order to, to make sure that, and not just intentional, but, habitual and, you know, coming up with a schedule that we can do that, you know, whether that's meeting together with a bunch of people once a month or, you know, a call or a Zoom. I've been doing that with my friends lately. It's like, hey, let's jump on a Zoom and just talk about whatever's going on. And just kind of have to have those outlets.
And outlets like that too, like the Zoom with old friends. You said in the sermon too that it requires effort on our part, right?
Oh yeah.
Sometimes the phone feels like it's 100 million pounds and you don't want to pick it up, and even like it's just gonna take time or it's gonna take effort, and you know what I mean? You're gonna have to put work into it and actually think and ask things that are meaningful rather than the hey, how's the weather and stuff.
Yeah.
I did wonder, though, I want to touch on something else that you spoke about. Like, we were looking at the yo-yo example, by the way, I didn't realize that you're a professional circuit yo-yoer. But we also called it boomerang anxiety. So in life, like, and this is all the time for me, like I'll have a season of anxiety and then I'll have several months, sometimes weeks, of just like good times, feeling strengthened, feeling empowered, feeling, you know, really close with God. Mm-hmm. So, but then when that boomerang comes back, which it seems like it always does in my life in one way or the other, I almost wonder, do you think that's more attributed to like us not having a real strong faith to sustain that for a long time? Or do you think that there's a purpose in our anxiety? Do you think like God allows us to have purposeful anxiety at times to where it helps us grow and strengthen?
So here's maybe what I would say about that. So for one thing, there's great examples all throughout scripture of people that felt really like they were close to God and then feeling like he was really far away. There's one of the ancient church fathers that calls it the dark night of the soul, of like feeling like God is so far away and problems and everything, and like I'm drowning. So I think in certain situations, now sometimes it's our own doing, right? Like I ran away from God and now he feels far away. I do think there's another aspect of it too, like you just touched on, is, you know, you're teaching a kid to ride a bike. Eventually you're going to, you know, you're not even going to know your dad's not holding on back there anymore.
Yeah.
But, and you're just kind of going, and then all of a sudden you crash and you're like, where were you? And you're like, it's like, well, that's how your faith gets bigger, you know? So I do think there's an aspect of that as well, of God. Okay. You say you trust me. Well, what happens if I am not right there?
Yeah.
Do you still trust me? And I don't like that.
I mean, and like one of the biggest, when you said there were several examples in the Bible, man, Job, he went through it.
Big time.
Like he was super close with God at the beginning.
Yeah.
Let's see. So when God was away from him, was the boomerang out or did the boomerang come back? No, he held the boomerang for a long time and then he threw the boomerang away at the very end.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's several examples. And I think like the first one I expected you to use today, which you didn't use, was the Matthew anxiety one where he says, don't be anxious about your today or your tomorrow.
Right, yes.
But I know you stayed away from it intentionally because it's like the main foundational, you know, stereotypical front one used.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's really good too. Like God's got your today, he's got your yesterday, he's got your tomorrow. And I try to remember that when I get anxious. And it helps, I think, at the end of the day to start living more in the moment, understanding God's in control.
Right.
And today when we worshiped, we listened to that song by Shane and Shane that You've Already Won.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another, like that song reminds me almost of the same thing. Like every time we think we're fighting these battles and we're putting our own strength into it and we're trying hard to just push back and white knuckle the anxiety and the problems, why?
Right.
Like you just have to give it to God and realize what's going to happen happens.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of... I think anxiety is rooted in a lot of desire to control.
Oh, absolutely.
Big time. And I think you said that
today. Right, yeah. Bit. That's the verse I think you're alluding to is the one that says, you've got enough worry for today. Worry about tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard for me. I like to worry about next week and 3 months from now and a year from now. And the encouragement there is like, you've got some things that you need to worry about today. You know, what do you do today about that? And sometimes that's a great way to pull yourself out of anxiety is living more in the moment. There's a tool that Tori's therapist that she was going to at one point would give her is that to just name some objects in the room and just, book, window, plant. And to ground yourself in the moment.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens is the things in the future can get all over top of us. And just needing a chance to breathe a little bit and begin to feel some of that. And, you know, sleep is great. Sleep is awesome. Eating right, exercising to let off some of that anxiety. That is something. So I talked about that today. We can use it as a crutch to where, like, all right, I got to go work out more to get all my problems away. But it is a really good taking a walk, getting away from, you know, just changing your atmosphere a little bit. Your environment can really help.
You seem like the type of dude that if you get stressed or anxious, you go to the gym and you bench like 1,000 pounds. You got nice pectoral.
Yeah, right. I don't know about 1,000 pounds.
So listen, I have gotten out of the swing of running and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And since I've been married in February, my normal weight was like 150. Mm-hmm. And like that was a good weight. Like when I was in active addiction, I might have weighed like 120.
Sure.
I weigh 185 pounds.
Yeah, great.
No, that's a lot of... Listen, so there's some cheeseburgers over there.
Right,
Chinese food.
Well,
I think that the last thing I wanted to say on the last point you said was, like, worry is so intertwined with anxiety, but at the same time, like, there's good worry. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's things that we have to draw our attention to and really stay on top of. And the idea that came to my mind was, like, for instance, the church needed a new roof, right?
Right.
Like, so several months in advance, you guys are worrying about how this is going to happen. So, and I guess in life, we have to identify, like, what is a healthy or a good worry, something that really needs our attention, and the things that might just be, you know, unwarranted fear or unwarranted. You told me fear and anxiety are different. Unwarranted anxiety that's not over a thing that's necessarily evident.
Well, these are, we don't have anxiety on accident. God gave us that as a survival tool to worry about what am I going to eat tomorrow, you know? And, and those are good worries, but I do wonder sometimes... if sometimes we're so comfortable in life that we have more time to worry about things that people 500 years ago would have never, ever thought of worrying about because they're, you know,
waking up in the morning to go hunt a mammoth.
I don't know about 500 years ago. But that's probably, maybe, I don't know. But in the same regard, is the corn going to come in this year, you know? And so almost... we're gluttons for comfort so much that we have some of that time. And so that's just a comment on maybe things aren't as good as we thought, you know, as bad as we thought they were back then, as far as community and having those people, making the time for all those things and doing what you can do today. And and you got anything else?
No, I know we could go on.
Yeah, it's been great. And I'm sure we'll have you back for something at some point. We might have even scheduled one.
I think the other one was addiction. Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it is. Yeah.
Stay tuned for it. Yeah, right. Can I give him a spoiler I wasn't supposed to give him?
No, yeah. That's great. Okay, perfect. Cool. Yeah. Stay tuned. John will come and share a little bit about addiction, not just from his own personal experience, but been working in the recovery community and doing awesome things. And so he'll be able to talk to us about that here in the next few weeks. Jump in on Sunday. We'll have our next topic, which I can't remember what it is right now, but it'll be something. Doubt, comfort, greed. I think it might be greed. It could be. We're going to talk about some other problems inside of us. So, hey, we love you so much, church family. Thank you so much for John being with us today. And we'll see you on Sunday.